So in chapter 10 and verse 38, we have the quotation from Habakkuk 2, the just shall live by faith. The just shall live by faith. And then we enter into a discussion of by faith. By faith. The fathers believed that the worlds were made out of nothing. And that's a very generic situation. But then he gets specific with Abel, worshipped properly. Enoch walked and lived properly before God. Noah prepared for the saving of his family. That's us. All of us who are alive now are a part of the family that was saved. That's important. You know, I was having a discussion with one of our brothers the other day. And I said, you know, we're all related going back to our original parents, Adam and Eve, but even closer than that, through Noah's three sons and their wives. All of the races, all of the people came from one family. So we're all related. So every one of you is married to a cousin, so quit talking about Kentucky. Georgia, okay, quit talking about Georgia. But all kidding aside, why is it that we need to love each other? Why do we need to interact with each other properly? Well, we're made in the image of God, but even we're family. We're family. We're a physical family. And then bring it down even closer, we're God's family, his spiritual family, which is a smaller group of people. We need to love each other. We need to take care of each other. We need to have proper views towards each other. And we're getting ready to look at the 11th of 12 brothers, and his family didn't take care of him very well at all. But ultimately, it was a part of God's plan for the saving of his people, for the bringing of Messiah into the world. Messiah did not come through the line of Joseph, but the line that Jesus came from would never have survived had it not been for Joseph. Joseph was one of those individuals, like Esther, who was called for such a time as this. We get a lot of interesting perspectives on Joseph. A lot of them are wrong. And I want us to look at these this morning, moving forward, so that we can have a better understanding of what's taking place in the life of Joseph. Now, as we've looked through, by faith, Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, and now we find ourselves at Joseph, we need to understand that each of them accepted what God said, they trusted what God said, and then they acted upon what God said. It wasn't enough to just accept. It wasn't enough to accept and trust. They had to act. Noah, he accepted and he trusted God, and he just sat back and waited for rain. Is that what he did? Who would have been saved? He had to act. He had to act. We have to act. Our actions show our trust and faith in God. We've got to act on those things. So we find ourselves in chapter 11, verse 22. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. He died at 130 years, and he gets that one sentence. What happened leading up to that he is able to, by faith, make this proclamation so that things could be done properly and that God's people could return in the manner he had intended? The writer of Hebrews omits any reference to any of Joseph's previous life, his interaction with his siblings, what happened in Potiphar's house, what happened in prison, what happened in Pharaoh's house. It omits all of those things, but it assumes that the reader is familiar with those things. You don't just mention Joseph, who takes up 20 chapters in the book of Genesis, and not expect that the people are going to know who he is. Now, which Joseph is he talking about? You don't have that problem when you've read your Bibles. He's not talking about the the earthly father of Jesus. He's not talking about the Pharisee from Arimathea who claimed the body of Jesus. When he says Joseph, everybody knows who he's talking about. Let's go back and let's take an interest in this life that was his. Now in Genesis chapter 37, we're introduced to the person Joseph. Genesis chapter 37. And let's look at verses 2 through 11. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than his children because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably with him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Look, I've dreamed another dream. At this time, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come and bow down on earth before you?" And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now, we get a lot of false impressions from this part of the text right here. And I want to try to help us understand a little bit more about this guy, Joseph. Let's start with the fact that he was the 11th of 12 brothers. If you look at the story of Jacob, Jacob worked 7 years for Rachel, but he got Leah. So there's no children in the first 7 years. And he goes and he complains. He said, "Well, it's not right that the younger should be married before the older. So give her her week and I will give you Rachel, but you got to work another 7 years." So 7 days later, he gets Rachel. Each of them has a handmaid, Zilpah and Bilhah. During the next 7 years, 11 sons are born. 6 to Leah, 2 each to the handmaids, that's 10, and 1 to Rachel. And he comes last of the 11. They stay 6 more years while he's tending the flocks, and ultimately he then packs up and he leaves. With his 11 children, his wives, everything that he has, his livestock, and Rachel, of course, was pregnant with Benjamin at this time. So there is about a 6 to 7 year difference between Joseph and Benjamin. But there's only about a 5.5 to 6 year difference between Reuben and Joseph. All of these boys are the same age. We get the false impression that there's this huge difference between the older brothers and Joseph. And it's not true. Joseph, when he sold into slavery at 17, his older brother would only have been 23. Okay.
Different wives.
Right, because there were children overlapping because of the 9-month period, but you got 4 ladies producing kids, and that's how the math works out. Okay? So Joseph wasn't this punky little kid, snot-nosed brat running around. He was the same age as his brothers, basically. Now, as you look, he's working with his 4 brothers from the 2 handmaids, which are called Joseph's wives, because they were considered to be his wives. So there's five of them working, and Joseph brings a bad report. He's not a tattletale, as a lot of people want to make it out to be. He was responsible, and their livelihood, their very existence, depended on their effectiveness in their jobs. It wasn't like they're just stocking shelves somewhere. They're tending animals. They're probably raising some kind of crops to eat. And if the animals don't work out right, and if the crops don't come in from the field, what happens to this huge family? They're going to starve. So he brings this report. Now, his father had made him a coat of many colors, a tunic of many colors. We have uncovered through archaeology depictions of people from this region wearing these long tunics with long sleeves and many colors on them. The tunic symbolized authority and responsibility. Jacob had made Joseph the superintendent over his brothers. Why? Because he was the responsible son. He's the only one out of the 11 who was responsible. We're going to see that play out all the way through the story. What happens when there's a famine 2 years later? What does Jacob say to his sons? Why are you standing here? There's grain down there. What are you doing standing here? Why did he have to say that to them? Because they were irresponsible. You know what my dad used to say? My dad had a lot of funny sayings, as Marines often do, and some of them are not repeatable in mixed company. But my dad had funny sayings, and when you were standing there not working, he'd always say, why are you standing around counting your change? And when he said that, you knew it was time to get to work. Because whatever came next wasn't going to be as much fun. Why are you standing around counting your change? What are the sons of Jacob doing? Every time you turn around, they're counting their change. They're not working. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. So he was given this responsibility. Now, also, it says that Joseph was the son of Jacob's old age. That is a really poor translation. How could he be the son of his old age when Benjamin was 7 years younger? How could he be the son of his old age when there was only 5 years and some change between the oldest and him? It's because the translation is off. He was his mature son. The old age refers to Joseph, not to Jacob. He was his mature son. He's the only one he could count on. Now, he did love him more. And why did he love him more? Well, one of the reasons might be because he could count on him. But even more importantly, because that was Rachel's son. That's why he loved him more. Now, it's interesting to point out that Leah, the one who was loved less, God kept giving her kids. Okay? Kept giving her kids, but not Rachel. And one of the kids that she got, Judah. Where does Jesus come from? Judah. Comes from Judah. Doesn't come from Rachel, comes from Leah. So when you look at this entire story, God is working so many different angles through this story, ultimately to bring Jesus into the world. Joseph, through Rachel, is there to make sure that Judah survives.
Isn't or wasn't Joseph buried next to Leah, his first wife?
Jacob.
Wasn't Jacob buried next to Leah and not Rachel?
Rachel was buried while they were traveling.
Right.
But he was buried with his father and grandfather. But that's where she was buried.
Right.
Yeah. So that's who he was buried with. That's correct. So, you know, we didn't have the luxury of embalming and putting somebody on a plane and flying them halfway around the world to be buried wherever they decided to be buried back then. You know, unless you were out of Egypt, which Joseph's case, as the second in charge of Egypt, he was embalmed just like the pharaohs that we dig out of those tombs. That's why 400 years later they were able to carry him back, which of course in Hebrews 11, that's what it's talking about. He gave instructions concerning his bones. Yeah. So, he was the responsible and trustworthy son. Now, his brothers hated him. So we have these dreams about sheaves, and we have these dreams about the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars. His dad takes all these things under advisement, but he's like, you might not ought to be saying that around your brothers. I've heard preachers and teachers say Joseph was arrogant and he was prideful. You can't get that from the text. We don't know what attitude he brought with that. There's no emotion in those words. He may have been, but to say declaratively that he was, you can't say that. He may have been a very humble person, and he may have been coming honestly. Now, how many of you control your dreams? I dreamed this last night. How dare you? Nobody ever says that. So why are they saying that to him? They didn't like what the dream was. Okay? They didn't like what the dream was. But it wasn't Joseph's fault that he had the dreams. And him revealing those dreams only brought about God's purpose in the end. And what does Joseph say to his brothers after his dad dies? You meant this for evil, but God meant this for good. I mean, we're getting to the end of the story, but you understand that God is working this whole thing out. And he's working it out through events and attitudes. And he's using the ungodly sons of Jacob to make it happen. Isn't that wild? But God does that often. Read through your Bibles, you can see it. So, in chapter 37, 12 through 36, we won't read all of it, but the brothers are supposed to be in Shechem tending the flocks. That's where they're supposed to be. Jacob comes to Joseph and says, go check on your brothers in Shechem. And he goes to Shechem, they're not there. They packed up and they moved somewhere else. Now, if you were a responsible son, wouldn't you send word back to your dad that, hey, you know, we had to move the flock somewhere else? So he gets there, and they've made another irresponsible decision and moved without telling anybody. Joseph finds out from someone who's there. They said, oh, yeah, he went over here. He goes over there. They see him coming. Oh, there's that dreamer. We need to do something with him. What do? They sell him into slavery to the Ishmaelites. They take goat's blood, they throw it on his supervisor jacket, and they take it back and say, you know, a wild animal killed him. Now, how responsible are you as a brother to go to your dad and tell him that his son's dead when he's not? We sold him into slavery, but we're not going to tell you that. We're going to make you grieve over him because you showed favoritism to him. That's
mean.
What's that?
It's mean.
It is mean.
Evil.
It's evil. It's ungodly. Yeah. It's a lot of things. So we look at this and we understand why Joseph was the responsible one. Look at how hard they're working to get out of work. I look around me today and I see so many people working harder to get out of work than they would be working if they were working. It's just something else. But that's a story for another day. They conspired to kill him. You know why they just conspired to kill him? Because he was doing his job. He was doing what his father had told him to do. And they killed him for it. Now that's kind of scary stuff. But it is the truth. So in chapter 39, we find that he's been sold into slavery. Beginning in verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of the house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was from time to time that he made him overseer of the house and all that he had, and the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Now, let's stop right there. How many times does Moses reiterate that God is blessing this every step of the way? Never gives credit to Joseph. Why is that? Because my guess is because Joseph was giving credit to God. This isn't from me, this is from God. Does that speak to his pride or to his humility? It speaks to his humility. So back up to the dreams for a second. We got to be careful about saying he was prideful. Okay? He may have been. You know, he may have been just yucking it up over those dreams. But the text doesn't tell us that. So we got to look at the whole person of who Joseph is in order to try to interpret that event. Thus, all that he had, he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except the bread which he ate. Now, ladies, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Form. He had a nice body. Now, go in your mind, whatever you think the perfect male body is, probably his. Appearance, face, drop-dead gorgeous. We don't know very much about the looks of anybody in the Bible outside just a handful of things, but we've got a really strong description of Joseph here. And he had a nice body, and he had a nice face, and Potiphar, his wife, apparently felt like she wasn't being treated right by her husband, and she had this nice-looking guy here at home. Hey, what's the deal here, right? And it came to pass after these things that the master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against Potiphar?" Is that what it says?
No.
What does it say?
Against God.
Against God. Where's his head?
Where it should be.
It's where it should be. Now, if he was a prideful guy, and he's got this great body, you know, he's the cover of the firefighter's calendar. That's him. He took you out of the job there, Luke. I'm sorry. And he's got this great-looking face. If he was filled with pride, do you think he might take advantage of that? What did David do? And David was handsome.
There's the other reason his brothers didn't like him.
Uh-huh. Could be. You know, the two handmaids and Leah may not have been producing, you know, GQ-style children. Rachel might have been the only one that was putting out the good stock.
Right, and it said Rachel was the prettier one, so she produced the prettier.
That's right. Yeah, she was the prettier one. So, what happens? Well, let's back up. The Lord was with Joseph in verse 2. He was successful, verse 2. He prospered, verse 3. He found favor in verse 4. He had authority, verse 4. He was an overseer, verse 5. The Lord was blessing everything that his hand touched. Everything. And Potiphar's wife then yells rape when he runs away from her. Now, one of the things that you got to understand archaeologically is back during that time, the prison was usually under the house of the prison general. So he was downstairs at Potiphar's house in prison, while she's up there. And he's in the dungeon. because he did the right thing. Have you ever suffered for doing the right thing? It happens. It happens. Joseph is suffering twice now for doing the right thing. He was taking care of what his father had put him in charge of. He's taking care of what Potiphar put him in charge of. And both times, not his fault, not anything that he had done. Now, he wasn't perfect, we know that, but I mean, obviously, he was doing his very best. He's doing his best. So, he's thrown into prison, verses 20 through 23. Verse 21 and 23, both times says, but the Lord was with Joseph. Why do you think Moses keeps including that in the text? Who's he writing to? He's writing to the children of Israel that are about to leave Egypt and go to the promised land. He is telling them the story of how they got there and how they're going to get out. And he's not pulling any punches. And all of you that are the descendants of Reuben and Simeon and Levi and Judah and Naphtali and Dan, you know, you guys are the ones that basically threw him in jail, and he was the one who was trying to help you. Now, if they're going to carry the bones of Joseph back, they need to have some appreciation for what they're doing too, don't they? I was very blessed back in October to walk about 3/4 of a mile behind a caisson pulling my dad's casket at Arlington National Cemetery. There is zero, nothing that can ever give you that experience besides being there. You can see the videos, but you got to be there. And the way they handled his body, you'd have thought it was the President of the United States. It was unreal. Everything they did was perfect to a T. Not one thing was left out. Not one thing was done wrong. Not one thing was disrespectful. They were so respectful. How do you think Moses wants Joseph's body treated? And what ends up happening to his body? It goes around the wilderness for 40 years. So they're carrying him around. How do they need to be treating him? Why do they need to treat him that way? They needed to know who this was and what he had done for them. So chapter 40, 1 through 8, we have the butler and the baker are imprisoned. They're placed in Joseph's care. What happens to Joseph? He's now in charge of the prison downstairs. Yeah. Everywhere he goes, he rises to the top. 11 brothers, boom, he's at the top. Potiphar's house, boom, he's a slave. But now he's in charge of everything except for the wife. Didn't even know what he had except the bread on his plate. You know what that tells me? He was taking care of his money too. Now he's in prison, boom. He's the main trustee in the prison. So he is there with them for, verse 4 says, for some time and for a while. Each of them had dreams, and Joseph trusts God for the interpretation of those dreams. Now, the butler had a dream about pressed grapes into Pharaoh's cup. The baker had dreamed of bread on his head and the birds coming and eating the bread. Okay? Butler, 3 days, you're heading back. All's going to be good. Baker, you're going to die in 3 days. That had to be a fun thing to tell. You know, well, it was, well, he flat out just told him. 3 days later, what happened? The butler's restored, and the baker is killed. As the butler's on the way out the door, remember me. Remember me. Well, chapter 41 and verse 1, that it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by a river. How long had Joseph been in prison after the butler was released? 2 years. How many of you want to trade places with Joseph? Your family's rejected you. You've been falsely accused. You've been imprisoned. You help a guy out, and then you're forgotten. But you know, the one that didn't forget about him is God. God's working this thing out all the way through. Now, Joseph is tasked with interpreting the dream of Pharaoh. And we're going to get into that dream next week. But let's look at what has been done and let's remark and reflect on how much Joseph depended on God. 17. Now, I know it's a different time, different place. 17 isn't today's 17. You know, my 17 wasn't today's 17. You know, 5 years ago when I was 17. You know, things change over time. You know, they wax and they wane. But as a 17-year-old, he wasn't this kid out cruising the strip. He was working. He was responsible. Now, you think that large family that Jacob had and the servants that he had, that was quite an enterprise they had going on. Why would it be important for somebody to be responsible? Well, because they're going to die. They couldn't just go down to the corner store and buy something. They couldn't go down to the bank and borrow money if they came up short. They survived off of what they had. Who caused him to be blessed? God did. God did. He sold into slavery. You know, is that a bad deal? Yeah, I would say so. Taken from your house, sold into slavery. Who's with him? God's there. He's falsely accused, thrown in prison. Is that a bad deal? Mm-hmm. But God was with him.
Mm-hmm. And God caused Potiphar to buy him, not somebody else that was awful.
That's right.
He caused Potiphar to buy him, and he was a slave in Potiphar's house as opposed to somebody else. But God was working and making sure that it happened to him.
Absolutely. And God also knew what Potiphar's wife was going to do. And that Joseph would go into prison, and that would lead him into the house, the palace of Pharaoh. Now, think about that. The next time something really bad happens in your life, and thank God for the opportunity to go through some things. Now, that doesn't make it good. And when you look at Romans 8:28, it doesn't say God's going to make everything good. He's going to make good come out of things in your life. But he's not going to make everything good. You don't learn if everything's good. You don't learn if everything goes right. You don't learn if everything is successful. You learn from your failures and your disappointments and your discouragements. And it gives you greater appreciation when you do finally reach a point that things go well. Lon?
You just said that it was God that caused Joseph to be blessed. But Joseph had a responsibility in that. He chose the knowledge that he had to put it into application. I mean, he didn't just know about God or know what God expected. He did what God expected. He made a choice.
Certainly.
And that's how God was able to bless.
Yeah. We all are in a position of blessing. But whether or not we use those blessings is entirely up to us. God distributes those blessings to us. He's given us intelligence. He's given us health. He's given us the opportunity for education. He's given us circumstances in life. He's given us all these things. But aren't we the ones responsible for putting those things into practice? That's a great point.
We had a teacher here one time who said, if you keep having the same trials over and over again, sit down and figure out what it is you're supposed to learn from it, because clearly you haven't learned it yet.
Yes.
He said, that's why this is happening.
Again.
You really need to look at it and say, okay, God, what am I supposed to learn from this? Because he said, and then you'll be able to get out of it.
And that's one of the problems that we have, is we're always trying to ask, why me, Lord? Remember Chris Christopherson's song back in the 70s? Why me, Lord? What have I ever done to deserve you? And one of the blessings that you've shown. And then he goes on, and he's talking about Jesus in that song. If you remember the song, it's very poignant. But we have a problem stopping with why me, Lord, instead of getting into the things that God's done for us. And we need to be asking the question, what? What do I need to learn from this? It doesn't mean that we don't, you know, grieve when we lose somebody. It doesn't mean that we don't suffer and sorrow and all those things. But at the same time, what is it that we're trying, that God's wanting us to learn from this? Yes, sir?
Joseph, like us, he had to pray in secret. He knew he was mistreated in these circumstances and issues. So he had kept the faith. So Israel there, his dad, and Joseph was taught to pray. So in these circumstances, he had to pray, but he was still a child over and over.
That's right. And we're not given the details of his relationship with God. But you can see there's a strong connection between Joseph and God. It's there every step of the way. Absolutely. So what do we learn from this? Okay, we know the Paul Harvey on this, right? We know the rest of the story. We know how it all works out. And we're going to talk about that next week. But what is important for us to keep in mind is God, you're here. I don't care how old you are. I don't know where your station in life is. I don't care about any of that, because God's got you here for a reason. You still have usefulness in the kingdom. And we need to see the blessing of life here as something that is extremely important and useful to God. We can be an asset to God. But we've got to perk up. What? What is it you want me to learn? There was a brother in Franklin, Kentucky. He had been an elder for a number of years. He was not an elder when I got there. And he was in his 90s. He and another former elder were 95 and 96 years old. They were best friends. They had served together as elders. They were no longer serving. And his friend got cancer. He decided he didn't want to take any treatments. I've got a picture in my office, if you ever come in my office, and it's on one of my filing cabinets, of the two of them the last time they saw each other in the hospital. And they're talking, and it was hilarious. The one that was going to die is talking to his friend, and, you know, neither one of them could hear. So everybody in the hospital heard the conversation. And Guy, the one who was going to die, is leaning over, and he goes, yeah, I got this friend. We go over to Cracker Barrel twice a week as a female friend, okay? He said, and he looks at Chester, he says, but there's nothing going on. He wanted to make sure that there was not a wrong impression on that thing. It was so amazing. It was so wonderful. But Chester, after Guy died, he was on dialysis. And I was over at his house talking to him. He goes, I just don't know why I'm still here and if it's right for me to stay, you know, on these machines to keep me alive. And I said, who gave us the blessing of those machines? God gave us that. Yeah, but I really don't know what I have to offer. And I said, Chester, you have no idea what it does to 350 people when you walk into that building at 96 or 97 years of age with that smile on your face. And greeting people and talking with people. You light up the room when you go in there. And I said, maybe that, at this point in your life, that's your gift, is the encouragement of your presence. Next Sunday he walked in, and I mean, you could not have knocked the smile off his face. He was so happy to be there, and he's got his cane, and he's taking little steps, you know, and he's coming down through there. He ended up dying at 98 years old. And sweet, sweet man. But there he is, you know, and he's trying to figure it out. Maybe some of you are trying to figure it out. Ask God. Ask God what your purpose is in life. We're going to turn things over to Stephen now and have our closing prayer, and then we'll be dismissed.